You're listening to Now I've Heard Everything, conversations with the icons of our time.
In the 1930s, the Communist Party of the United States was honored to a point almost of reverence. There was almost no person of talent in the United States who was not connected with it in one way or another.
Author and former communist, Howard Fast. Today on Now I've Heard Everything, I'm Bill Thompson. The Red Scare that engulfed the United States in the years immediately after World War II ruined many careers, as any affiliation with the Communist Party would get you blacklisted. So it was that popular novelist Howard Fast suddenly found himself a pariah because of his membership in the Communist Party USA, a contentious appearance before the House Un-American Activities Committee in 1950. Actually resulted in a 3-month prison term for Fast for contempt of Congress. But it was during that 3 months in prison that Fast began work on what would turn out to be his most famous novel, Spartacus. By the end of the decade, Howard Fast had left the Communist Party because of discontent with its leadership, and the blacklist had been lifted. In 1990, he wrote a memoir, a book called Being Red. That's when I had the chance to meet him and spend a few minutes with him. So here now, from 1990, Howard Fast.
Well, I wrote this book about events that happened to me half a century ago, which were forgotten, most difficult to explain, wiped out of history, and I thought it ought to be reinserted into history. I think it's the only book of its kind that exists, the only book that gives a personal narration of those particular events of which I write. And it's the main section of the book is the experience of 12 years in the Communist Party of the United States. Did I say why I wrote it? I wrote it because my kids gave me no peace. They said, "Pop, you've got to write this."
Well, in the sense that you are a leading figure, not only as a novelist, many people admire you for your works of fiction, but your leadership role in that phase of our history, you had to write a book about this sooner or later, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, I had to. Very, very little that I write is not connected in one way or another with what I've experienced. It's not that I find it difficult to invent. I get no satisfaction out of inventing. It always seems so pallid compared to what I have witnessed.
And you've witnessed a great deal, haven't you?
Yes, and by golly, if I can stay healthy and alive, I'm going to witness a lot more because we're at the moment when the last convulsion is happening.
It almost begs the question, is communism dead?
Communism as it functioned in the Soviet Union, I think, is dead. It's dead because it was filled with grotesque errors that, even at the level of stupidity that functions in most human events, cannot be repeated. So I think that that kind of communism is dead, that kind of socialism is dead. I don't think that socialism as a way of solving the problems of mankind is dead.
What drew you initially to the Communist Party?
My own experience in poverty and misery, in witnessing the inequality of the world.
But there are many, many, many poor people, people who experienced horrible poverty, who never even consider the Communist Party, who abhor the Communist Party.
Well, no, this was not the case in the 1930s. Quite different. In the 1930s, the Communist Party of the United States was honored to a point almost of reverence. More or less in every corner of the country. It had enemies, violent enemies, but by and large, there was almost no person of talent in the United States who was not connected with it in one way or another.
But the word communist had a very different meaning then than it has today, didn't it?
Very different. Exceedingly different. Chiefly because from the end of World War II until the election of Dwight Eisenhower to the presidency, the government of the United States spared no effort in its indictment of communism. This was in preparation for war with the Soviet Union, which, thank God, never took place. But it enabled J. Edgar Hoover to become a shadow dictator of the United States.
Why are you no longer a communist?
Well, no longer ended in 1954, I suppose. So 1956 would probably be more exact. Because in my experience, the whole thing collapsed. Then it collapsed locally the way it collapsed on a gigantic scale in the Soviet Union in the past 2 years. It became an impossible bureaucratic dictatorship of a handful of rigid leaders over a membership that thought differently of practically everything. And I think that's more or less exactly what happened in Russia. It took longer, though.
When you were a member of the party, did you find that the leaders lost sight of the principles that had drawn you to the party in the first place?
Yes, they lost sight of everything except the maintenance of their bureaucracy, their jobs, and the rigidity of their operation. The question of a discipline which they felt was more important than any principle.
Looking back on how you've made out since then, you have had no particular lack of success in life since then. Do you regret any decisions that you made along the way?
No, I don't regret it. I sometimes reflect on how much more comfortable my life would have been. I contrast the fact that the 5 or 6 books I wrote before I joined the party were lauded to the skies by every critic in the country. I was praised as no writer at the time was praised. I was set up for the Pulitzer Prize and whatever would follow. And then after I joined the party, never got a good review again in a leading paper in this country. So that, although my work grew better and better constantly, I think it's at its best today. But against that, I would say in the past 12 years, at least 15 million, probably as many as 18 million of my books have been sold. So I cannot complain about that. I'm probably the most beloved and the most hated writer in the United States.
After this short break, Howard Fast talks about why he is a writer.
Start your day with Now I've Heard Everything.
We post new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time.
Subscribe now so you'll have something fresh to listen to and get your day going.
Now back to my 1990 conversation with Howard Fast.
I was in a bookstore the other day, and I saw almost a whole row in the paperback section was filled with your books. I mean, just a larger almost than Danielle Steele's section.
But at the same time, you want to be loved. This is the human need. You want to be loved, and to be loved in the making of literature is to get good book reviews. Being loved by your wife or your children or a mistress or whatever, if you have this one thing. But in the writer's world, there is no substitute for the critics. On the other hand, if you will permit me, I once wrote a series of television half-hour shows about interviews with leading Englishmen of the past. And one interview was with Shakespeare. And I had this man who had come up from a London newspaper to interview Shakespeare. Mr. Shakespeare, what is your opinion of the critic? And Shakespeare says, well, sir, the critic is the eunuch in the harem. Night after night, he watches it done, and he knows he can never do it again himself. So there it is, and still you want it.
When you're accustomed, as you are, to writing very successful novels, and you make the transition to writing a book that is not only nonfiction, but it's the story of your own life. Is it a difficult transition to make?
Terrible. Terrible. One thing, you have to tell the truth. I mean, if you decide to tell the truth, if you assign yourself to the telling of the truth, you have to give up the beautiful freedom of a fiction writer. Now, John Galbraith wrote one book of fiction. At that time, this was some years ago, and he sent it to me, and I read it with delight. And then we had dinner with him, and I said, "Why, Mr. Galbraith, in this book you finally told the truth. Why don't you ever do it in nonfiction?" He said, "Well, with fiction it's easy to tell the truth. You can be truthful or you can lie, and nobody hits you over the head for it."
I often think that there's a greater truth to be told in fiction than in nonfiction.
That's possibly so. That's the psychiatrist's point in dreams. You dream some sort of twisted truth.
Why do you like to write?
It's hard to say. This is my function. This is the only way I have of earning a living. And, you know, we write as a living. I don't look forward to a time when people will not have to write for a living. I think the writing is much better when you write for a living. My agent, Paul Reynolds, wonderful man, he's dead today, but my agent of many years, wonderful man, direct descendant of Paul Revere, lovely man. We were at dinner at his house, and next to me was a young editor, and she was trying to get me to tell her why I wrote. Same question, why do you write? And Paul's daughter, this wonderful, bright little girl, was serving, and she overheard this. She said, "Oh, Mr. Fast writes for money. All writers write for money." She said, my teacher at high school told the class that writers write for this and that reason. And I had to say to her, "But my father is a literary agent for dozens of writers, and all of them write for money, and they're always pestering him for money." So, simple answer.
I think deep down in their hearts, they all want what you were mentioning before, the good review and a nice royalty check. And if it's literary, if it's something that'll be on library shelves, so much the better.
Absolutely. But those who are courted the crown of literature and who write a book and it sells 10 copies, and then they see it, perfectly terrible book, sell 500,000 copies, they are infused with an unending bitterness. They can never forgive the writer whose readers are many. Strange part of the game, too.
Was being read a difficult book to write? I know that even telling one story about yourself is difficult for some writers, but to write a whole book, and to write a book that has a lot of pain in it, was it a difficult book?
Well, it was published 2 weeks ago, and I began it a year and a half before that. It was very difficult. It was terribly difficult because you don't know what to put in or what to leave out. As it was, the manuscript was half again as big as that. And my editor talked me into cutting out big chunks of it, validations. She said, "You don't have to prove these things. Nobody is going to question them, so all the documents and so forth and so on." But even so, the problem of what to write and what to leave out becomes a very difficult problem.
Do you think we're an open-minded society? Do we put up with people who have different political views than our own?
No, not as much as we should. We can't be compared to England in that respect or even to France. No, we're very intolerant of people with different points of view. But that has been changing lately. And nothing in recent years as much as this strange war that Mr. Butch is trying to concoct has so shifted opinions, and we find, what is his name?
Pat Buchanan.
Buchanan being an anti-war man, and we find the so-called liberals being for the war, and everything is shifting around. So it may be we're on our way to tolerating a variety of opinions that we poo-pooed in the past or denounced.
Howard Fast died in 2003. He was 88. Now you can get a copy of Being Read by Howard Fast by tapping the link in our show notes or by going to our website, heardeverything.com. We may earn an Amazon commission if you make a purchase. Heardeverything.com is where you'll also hear my 1990 interview with another former member of the Communist Party, and indeed the father of the modern gay movement, Harry Hay.
The first time we all sat down together, we didn't even know what to talk about. We didn't have words for it. We didn't have concepts yet. All the concepts that we now have that are connected with the gay movement and with gay consciousness and gay culture all come as a result of that first organization.
And my 1994 conversation with the attorney who represented many people who were members of unpopular organizations, William Kunstler.
Pickets around my house, bullets fly through the downstairs window, bullets in the mail, hate messages on my answering machine. If you're going to do these kind of cases, you got to anticipate and expect that and hope to live through it.
And of course, we post new episodes of Now I've Heard Everything here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you can find us everywhere you listen to podcasts. And thank you so much for listening. Next time on Now I've Heard Everything, while she's best known for her decades in the music business, it turns out that Judy Collins has a number of creative outlets, and we'll talk about them in my 2005 interview with Judy Collins.
We can't assume the role of the critic immediately. We have to wait. They'll come soon enough, the critics, if we're publishing anything or getting things out, even to our families. Sometimes our families are the hardest people to approach with anything.
That's next time on Now I've Heard Everything. I'm Bill Thompson.